better. I took a little risk. Said lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this.
All right. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. That, of course, is Warren Zevon. You know, lately we've been having a rash of deaths of artists and musicians who are dying at a young age. And you want to talk about a guy who died at a young age, Warren Zevon, who it's hard to believe he died 13 years ago, almost 13 years ago. But Warren Zevon, who's one of my favorite singer-songwriter artists of all time, his birthday is on the 24th of January, and tomorrow night, the 21st, at Space in Evanston, Androgynous Mustache will be performing the Warren Zevon Bash. Two members from that band are here, my good friend Chris Anderson and Charlie Short, who I haven't seen in a long time. Hi, guys.
Hello, Nick. It's good to see you.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming. Now, Chris, before we jump into the Warren Zevon thing, you were just telling me off the air that you just got back from seeing Bruce.
I did see Bruce.
How was it?
I did not yell out Bruce like everybody else
right.
in the crowd did
right.
over and over and over, especially the three guys behind me.
Yeah.
It was great. I was impressed.
Yeah, had you ever seen him before?
Never.
Yeah.
It was a kind of a holiday gift to my wife and kind of like a bucket list thing for
sure.
me. It was great. I mean, he did the whole River album and nailed it, and they did several songs afterwards. He had a trouble with the start of Surrender. I think he started that three times. And even I was like, I mean, I was looking at Max Weinberg, like, something's off here. And then they stopped. They're like, no, this is, and then he would do it again. But it was, you know, if you're going to handle screwing up a song, they did it the way to do it.
Sure.
It was hilarious. I mean, you do that in front of 22,000 people. Like,
right.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
But he killed it. It was great. It was fun. And he still has it, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a fanatic. I definitely have a lot of respect for the band, and it was a lot of fun. It was cool.
Yeah, that's cool. I've never seen. I'm not a big. I know this is sacrilegious. I'm not a real big Bruce Springsteen fan.
I'm the same way.
I mean,
but
like,
it was cool.
Yeah, he's fine, and you know, and everybody who tells me for years, for 40 years or whatever that Springsteen's been in the music business, every time I say I'm not a big Springsteen fan, every single response that I get from everybody is, "It's because you haven't seen him, man. You have to see him live." And I'm like, well, if I see him live and he plays somebody else's music, maybe I will like it more. He's out there for 3 hours. I'm like, I know he's out there for 3 hours, but he's playing Bruce Springsteen songs. That's my issue. So,
no, it was kind of like that. There was a lot of, you know, we're in line. We're going to the United Center, and we were in the frigid cold to get in the building. And there was this little guy who had to announce that he's from California. And then he's been to 18 shows, and he kept on going up to people going, are you a virgin? Are you a virgin?
Oh, God.
Is this your first show? And going on and on.
You didn't say you were.
No.
No, of course not. You're going to avoid that conversation.
He didn't come up to me. He asked me. I was thinking like, yeah, it's my brother, man. Why don't you get off my case? Just say something.
Yeah. I've known Bruce for 35 years, man. I'm from Jersey.
Yeah, right,
shut
right.
up.
And I was just like, you're just embarrassing it. Go away. You're not big enough to be in the building for crying out loud.
No, it's funny, Chris. You missed a pretty spectacular Hawk game tonight. Now, I know you were watching Bruce Springsteen.
I did. I walked out and I saw the empty netter.
Yeah. It was a great game.
Yeah.
Great
12
game.
In
12 in a row, man. Here's the thing that's insane is that Rene is got lit up tonight, obviously. And he's in the All-Star game. Corey isn't.
Right.
There's a certain stupid irony to that. Yeah. It's just ridiculous.
Well, you can put half the team in the All-Star game. I mean,
no, it's just true. It's true.
You gotta hand it to you really gotta hand it to Bowman for just being able to handle just an extremely difficult job with a salary cap.
Yeah.
And I think he just does a fantastic
job. I do too.
Such
and you find a kid like Panarin, for God's sake. I mean,
what about that pass the other night?
Like, unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Chris and I are big Hawks fans, so we're just, we had to catch up a little bit. Charlie, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I play in a band with a guy who will walk off the stage to watch the Hawks. Yeah. I'm not kidding.
It's not him.
No, it's not Chris. No, I play a gig downtown and he's like, they're in the playoffs, so you're going to be playing set number two by yourself. No, it's no joke. That
happens. No, there are a lot of us are like that, man.
I was doing
a benefit at Main Stage where you guys actually were doing the Warren Zevon
2 years in a row.
2 years in a row there. I was doing a benefit for a theater company called Lifeline Theater up in Rogers Park, and it was like I was hosting a spelling bee, an adult spelling bee, mm-hmm. to raise money, and it was a lot of fun. I had said okay to this gig like 3 months earlier, and it happened to be Game 6 against Boston in 2013.
Oh, man.
And so I told the host, you know, I was like, okay, look, first of all, I look like Aqualung because I got my playoff beard going, and I look like a psychopath. I just want you to know that. I will be wearing a jersey. My phone will be on vibrate. And I will – so it we ended up – I missed the first period, and it ended – the whole spelling bee thing ended about 4 minutes into the second period. So there was a bar out front. We ended up watching. Yeah, I ended up watching it there. So I didn't miss it. It was only it's 17 seconds of that game is the part that you had to see.
Yeah, you were like, maybe we're going to go to game 7.
Yeah. Boom. Nope. Yeah. Not at all. Okay, well, we're done talking about that kind of stuff. We're going to talk about Warren Zevon and music and all that cool stuff. We got to take a break. We got the news coming up right here. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WEG and Androgynous Mustache is the band. The 6th annual Warren Zevon Bash is at Space in Evanston. What a great room that is.
Yeah.
You guys got to be excited about that.
Very.
And so Chris Anderson and Charlie Shorter here, and we'll talk more about Zevon and other things right here on 720 WEGN. The news is up next.
I was sitting in the Hollywood Hawaiian Hotel. I was staring in my empty coffee cup. I was thinking that the gypsy wasn't blind. Salty margaritas in Los Angeles, I'm gonna drink them up.
Yeah.
And if California's like,
God, this is a good song. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That's the late great Warren Zevon. Joining me live in studio, Charlie Short, Chris Anderson from Androgynous Mustache. They'll be doing the 6th annual tribute to Warren Zevon, celebrating his birthday. He was born on the 24th of January, right here in this very city. And that's, you guys are going to play that. That's Desperados Under the Eaves. And you guys are actually adding that to the set list. It's a new song you guys are going to be doing this year.
That's right. We actually got a lot of requests for that this year. So yeah. It's the first time we're pulling this one off. So.
Yeah. Should be cool. All right. How did this start? How did the Warren Zevon tribute thing start?
I think it started at Reggie's when we were doing Reggie's on the last Thursday of every month at Reggie's down on the South Side. They have album night where bands will perform a rock album.
Yeah.
And it's usually like a Rolling Stones or a Beatles or a lot more mainstream stuff. And, God, this is 7 years ago?
It's got to be. I remember.
Yeah. And yeah, I pitched doing Excitable Boy to Charlie. We weren't even really a group.
No.
We just all knew each other.
Yeah.
And we kind of recruited different people. And I don't – did you know Warren Zevon's work very much?
Sure. Yeah.
I know Neil Alger, who's an extremely accomplished rock and jazz guitarist in the city, didn't really know him. And it was great. I mean, it just clicked. And we performed the whole album, and it just kind of stuck, I think, in our brain. And it was the fact that nothing was – he was such a prolific songwriter, and, like, nobody was really ever bringing him up.
Yeah.
You know, he passed in 2003.
Yeah.
And so about a year, well, I think it was 6 months later, let's do a night of Warren Zevon. And then it just kind of built from there. We did it at Quenchers over on Fullerton and Western. A couple years there and just started building and building. And we did a couple years at the Main Stage in Rogers Park and then Martyrs. And then I think we found a good home at Space in Evanston, and that's where it is.
It's a beautiful room, too, man. I've only been there twice. Well, both for this. No. Oh, wait a minute. What am I talking about? I've been there three times because I saw Mike Doty there and Steve Earle.
Oh.
And it's a great room. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a great room. And that was Steve Earle. It was just him, no band or anything.
Oh, that's a perfect room for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, man.
So Space is great. So check it out. Your tickets are going pretty well, but they are available. How can people get tickets?
Yeah, you just go to I believe it's space.com, and they actually can pick where they see it. They think that the $12 tickets are still available.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
At space.com. Yeah. Well, let's talk about
Evanston Space.com.
Evanston Space. Evanston Space.com. We'll have a link on our Facebook
page. You can go to space.com and read all sorts of interesting stuff.
Yeah, apparently the planets are aligned for the next month.
Yeah.
Starting
for
this morning.
That's the show, man.
Yeah, you could, instead of going to see Warren Zevon, just stare at the sky.
Yeah.
But we have a link on our Facebook page for everybody who wants to check it out. And I highly recommend it. I've seen you guys perform the Warren Zevon. I happen to be a Warren Zevon fanatic. So, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Which is a shame.
It's a damn shame. It's a damn shame. Well, before we get into more Warren Zevon, talk about his work and you know, all that cool stuff, let's get into the background on how you guys got into music. Now, Chris, I've known you for many years. In fact, I actually directed you in a play. You were in our live band, The Guzzlers.
Right.
And it was you, Scott Okun. Sorry?
2004.
2004. Yeah. It was for a show called Menage a Trailer.
That's right.
We had a live rock band on stage. Who was in the...
Mark Winkler was.
Mark. Yeah, Mark.
Scott Okun on guitar.
And Carrie.
And Carrie.
Carrie Sullivan.
Yeah.
And so you guys got to do original stuff.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was a lot of fun. It was really, really cool. But I knew you before that.
Sure.
From the, of course, the world of Simons.
Of course.
And bands and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. How did you originally, you know, were you always into music?
I mean, I took piano lessons as a kid, and when I got to the point where it was time for me to start really studying theory, musical theory, I just didn't have the patience or the inclination or just the maturity to really delve into it. I was playing ice hockey, I was playing baseball, I was playing soccer, and I had a mother, just all these interests, and I just laid off piano, which sent my parents through the roof. And so I started playing playing drums on my textbooks. And I'd make like little drum sets on my textbooks because I wasn't reading them. And then I told my parents, I really wanted the drums. I want to play the drums. Like, well, we have a big piano in the living room.
Right.
And they did not let me play the drums until I think it was the seventh grade. And I remember they went to go see Mel Torme perform. And I remember that when they came back that night, they said, okay, you can learn the drums. And that was it.
Whoa, wait a minute. It was Mel Torme?
True story.
Of all, it wasn't like that.
Well, they didn't go see Neil Peart and Rush.
No, I understand that, but it just... I mean, it could have been Buddy Rich, you know, but
Mel
Torme, so he must have had a pretty killer drummer in his band then.
No, Mel Torme is a great drummer, was a great drummer.
Yeah.
A great vocalist who wrote... many famous songs, which I'm sure in his grave he's still earning a paycheck from.
Yeah.
But he was actually a pretty accomplished drummer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So it was Mel. So you
that swayed my parents. That tilted the.
You'd thank the Velvet Fog.
That's right.
Yeah. So you got your. Now you have brothers and sisters. I know. You know, right. Your brother's been on the show a couple times.
Right. Yeah.
He is an actor and has done some great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we had him on for the series that was on. Showtime.
Yeah, reality show.
Reality show.
That whole thing is just so funny with how it
And Rifkin, we've had Rifkin on, the director.
Yeah, that guy's a character.
He is. But your brother is great, Scott. Mm-hmm. He's great. And do you have other brothers and sisters? Or?
There's three of us. Our oldest brother lives in Minneapolis.
Now, when you were growing up, was there music in the house? Were your older brothers like trying to get you to listen to stuff? Or?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think it was... Oh, God. I mean, I think it was everything from Neil Diamond to the Rolling Stones to Black Sabbath. It was a very hardcore vinyl family, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I didn't get my first CD player. I didn't buy my first CD until 1998.
Are you serious?
I swear to God.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Now,
yeah.
Charlie, what about you, man? What was your how did you start getting into music?
Well, my dad was a guitar player.
Yeah.
And then when the guy who came with all the instruments at our school played the violin and then the viola and then the cello and then he played the upright bass, and I thought that was the thing. And he's actually he played with George Duke and Al Jarreau.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so he like was my orchestra director. His name is Mike Manson.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of orchestra directors at schools are morons.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you got a dude. You got a musician.
Oh, yeah. He was a monster, and he was a bass player.
Wow.
So he could play the violin. I mean, he could teach us all this stuff, but, you know, And I saw him play, and then I had seen Paul McCartney, and I thought, well, there you go.
Yeah.
I watched Help. My brother, I'm the oldest of four, and my siblings thought I was weird, and so my parents would, you know, rent me a Beatles thing, and my siblings would watch Little Mermaid, and
you'd be watching Help.
I'd be watching Help. Yeah, I remember watching Tommy for the first time, and they're like, "What is this?" And they're watching some, you know, Lion King, and I'm watching Tommy,
like the Ken Russell.
Oh yeah.
Oh, oh yeah. Man,
that's special, real special. Well, and it wasn't until years later I was like, "This is a really weird movie." I just was waiting for John Entwistle to show up.
Yeah.
But starting about 8 or 9, I started playing bass, and then at some point I discovered that I could sing and play bass because of the McCartney thing, and. You know, about 10 years ago, I started, playing and singing, and Chris called me up to do this thing, and we did the soundtrack band. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're a great player, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, you are. And so, Chris, obviously, you know, I've known you a long time. You're a terrific drummer.
I appreciate that.
So these guys, and of course, you've got to be partners. I've got the rhythm section here.
Sure, right. Yeah.
The backbone.
The backbone, man. Right, the backbone. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. So you guys were talking about this. I was talking about it off the air. The soundtrack thing that you guys would do, where you would pick a soundtrack.
Right.
You would try to do it every, couple of months?
We did it every month for 2.5 years.
Three years. That's right. It was every month.
Yeah.
And you would pick a soundtrack and do all the songs from it.
That was half the show. The other half, it was a half rock show, half game show.
Right.
Because we'd ask, in between songs, we'd ask movie trivia from the movie and give out just goofball prizes. And I'd say,
I know Malort was
Malort was, prize. Shot of Malort was always, you know, what better prize is that?
Right.
for your friends and your enemies.
I got to tell you, let me just tell you very quickly. We had one of the guys from Malort in here a couple of years ago. And this was when I was still a drinking man. Yeah. And, well, you know that I've had my share. I've had gallons of Malort in my time as a drinker. Yeah. And I actually like Malort. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I haven't tasted it in a very long time. But do you like Malort?
Oh, yeah.
Well, sure. I know, Chris, you've consumed enough of it where you've built up a resistance to it.
Yeah.
And so I had no idea, but we had a guy from Malort in here, and we all did a shot. And so Dan comes in, and we're like, hey, let's all do a shot of Malort after the interview was over. Dan, my producer, Dan Sugar, he comes in here. Dan, would you care to pick it up from here?
So not wanting to be that guy, I took it for the first time, not telling it was the first time. And after the taste of burnt ashtray and wood passed through my gums, I just had that look on my face for like a minute. And then Nick noticed and said,
it was so funny. It was so funny. He did. I just assumed he'd had a shot of Malort. Okay. And, I've known Dan for a long time. When I was a drinker, I drank with Dan a few times. And I just assumed, the guy produced a bunch of shows of mine. Mm. I thought anybody who has ever worked with me must have tasted Malort at some point.
Whether by choice or driven to.
Exactly right, man. Now, Esmeralda, you bartended at the Hungry Brain for a long time.
Right.
Have you had Malort?
Yes.
Okay. And what do you think?
No. No, thank you.
But the thing about it, when Dan took that shot of Malort, me and the guy from Malort, we did it. No face. Didn't make the Malort face. Nothing. It was like, yeah, okay. I look at Dan. I swear to God, he lost all color in his face. He was wincing. His eyes were closed. And then I immediately went, oh, my God, this is the first time you've ever done Malort, isn't it? And
it was indeed.
And it was. I couldn't believe it. I was like, we should have done it on the air. Because I just assumed, because if, capturing that moment on video or on the air would have been spectacular.
Priceless.
Yeah. So, but you would give stuff away at the soundtracks. And I, in fact, actually wrote trivia for you one night for Dazed and Confused, the t-shirt I'm wearing right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, because I know too much about that movie. Seen it too many times.
I remember some of the trivia questions were Charlie and I were like, nobody. Not even Linklater would get this.
I know. I was asking really difficult questions. I was like, all right, well, in this part, blah, blah, blah. And I was doing stuff like, but I did throw in a few, like, what song is playing during this scene? Which people got.
Yeah.
Because you guys were playing, and you were actually trying to, if I remember correctly, this was at Quenchers, you were trying to sync it up to the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when it worked, it was pretty spectacular. Yeah, right, when you guys were playing the songs while it was, at the beginning, you guys played Sweet Emotion, and it was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
So, I miss seeing you guys do that. You going to pull one out every once in a while, maybe?
Every once in a while.
Yeah.
I don't know what's coming up. We're talking about doing, some compilations. We were talking about doing a Coen Brother compilation.
Yeah.
But we just did the 25th anniversary of Goodfellas. Before that, we did gosh, that was a while ago. It was the 20th anniversary of Pulp Fiction.
I was there for that one, yeah.
So they had, every now and then, we'll pull it out.
Pulp Fiction, you guys did a great job.
That was fun.
Not an easy one, too, because there's so many different kinds of music
That's
on that
exactly
soundtrack.
Right. Yeah.
That's tough, man.
And people don't get bored with that one.
No.
There's a couple, Dazed and Confused, Pulp Fiction, and Wedding Singer.
The soundtrack for The Wedding Singer is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is great. Okay, you guys, hang on. We got more to talk about. We'll talk about Warren Zevon. You guys, I mean, these are great musicians. Chris Anderson, Charlie Short. The band is called Androgynous Mustache. If you are a Warren Zevon fan, and you should be, you really, really have to go to space tomorrow night and check it out. And you can get your tickets now. They have tickets available at evanstonspace.com or on our Facebook page. We'll take a break, and we'll come back and talk Warren Zevon after this.
Don't matter if I get a little tired. I'll sleep when I'm dead.
Warren Zevon, man. One of the best American singer-songwriters of all time. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. I am joined in studio by Chris Anderson and Charlie Short from the band Androgynous Mustache, who will be performing the 6th annual Warren Zevon Birthday Bash tomorrow night, the 21st, at Space in Evanston, which is an incredible room and a great place to see a band. And these guys are a terrific band. I've seen you guys do the Warren Zevon thing. I think I've at three of the five. And this will be the 6th. Mm. So I've seen it 3 of the 5 times. And every single time it's been great. Except for when you play Nighttime at the Shipping Yard. At the Switching Yard.
Switching Yard.
Now, we've talked about this before. That it's like, I think Excitable Boy is a perfect album except for that song. And you do kind of like an explanation about that song. Explain Nighttime at the Switching Yard and how... And you know what? We'll play after the news. That's what we'll come back with. Just so people can actually hear what we're talking... Or at least... A little bit of it.
I think that when we did the album at Reggie's, that's part of the album, so we did
it's on Excitable Boy, yeah.
Excitable Boy.
Yeah.
And we didn't have enough material. We had some material for the next year when we did his catalog, and that was in the box. All right, let's bring it out. You know, just bring it out. And you were there for this.
Yes, I was.
And we played it, and we played, and we played, and it just kept on going. And then the saxophone player would solo. And then Neil Alger would solo on guitar. And they just kept on going back. And it would just keep on going. And it's do pop ba do da do 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 do.
You guys did.
It was forever.
You guys did like a 20-minute version of it. And I remember, because I hate that song. And I remember going, what the hell is going on? I was like, how long? And then you dedicated it to me.
Yes.
Like the next 2 years.
Every year, even when I'm not there, you dedicate it.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. But you were saying that it was like at that time when Excitable Boy came out in 78. And at that time, the disco thing was happening. So your theory, Chris, was that it was kind of, you guys, I don't know if you agree on this, it was kind of like, all right, well, maybe throw kind of a disco number in there.
Exactly. In case this tanks, because it was... I don't know if it was mainstream. I think they needed something to broaden out the album to appease the producer, to appease, like, hopefully this works, guys.
Yeah. You know? Go ahead.
They didn't think that Werewolves of London was going to be a hit.
Right.
Yeah.
And they were shocked. Waddy Wachtel talks about that, about how, that Werewolves of London, that's just a joke song. That's where we just got to fill out the album. And they had a lot of slow songs and some stuff that they dumped from the record.
Yeah.
And they listened to it, and they were sitting with Jackson Browne, and he and Jackson Browne said, Warren, we have to write some faster songs. And they wrote Nighttime in the Switching Yard, and then they wrote Lawyers, Guns, and Money. And Waddy Wachtel insists to this day that Nighttime should have been a hit and Werewolves shouldn't. I just read that the other day.
That's crazy.
I mean, Lawyers, Guns, and Money, which is amazing,
yes,
and Nighttime in the Switching Yard, which is
not amazing,
which has got some very, very nice players on it. You know, some very nice people.
I remember vividly, you know, because when I got that, that's because I got Warren Zevon the self-titled one from 76.
Oh yeah,
that was the first Warren Zevon album I ever bought, and I absolutely Backs Turned is my favorite song. Looking Down the Path.
Okay,
that's one of my favorite Zevon songs, and Sleeping I'm Dead is on that record, and it's a phenomenal record.
Yeah,
and then like I remember being really excited when Excitable Boy, I became an Excitable Boy when it came out, and I was very excited, and I got it, I brought it home, and I loved every song on it, and then I was like, what the hell is this? I remember just like thinking, even at 13 or whatever, however I was, how old I was when that record came out, I was like, what is he doing? What is this?
It's really strange.
It's a very weird sort of disco-y. Well, we'll hear a little bit of it after the 3 o'clock news. But what is it, what do you guys like about Warren Zevon? What is it, Charlie, what about you? What do you like about him?
Well, I think that, you know, there's not a lot of performers that have the vulnerability and humor, which is something that I love in music. You know, somebody that's writing about something, but then also, you know, they're writing about their inner life that's sort of about everybody's inner life. But then when there's that sort of sarcastic, you know, we're listening to I Sleep and I'm Dead, and he does those voices, and it's like, you could tell, like, this guy is just tired.
Yeah.
He is, and you know, and he was 24, and he was just tired. And there's something universal about everything that he writes about, and he's one of those people, there's certain performers that I think that people hear, and they hear them the first time, and they go, oh my God, love this.
Yeah.
And I think that Warren's one of those people.
I can say that personally. That's what happened to me. When I first heard Warren Zevon, it was unlike anything, you know, I had heard. What about you, Chris? How did you get into Warren Zevon, and what is it that you like about him?
As a kid, the hooks, but then later in life, just his cathartic view of life and just the brutal honesty that he has in his songs, and, you know, I'm going to do it the way I want to do it, and this is the way it is, and
yeah.
I know you feel the same way type of thing. And you just get in, like, we play this record, Desperados Under the Eaves.
Yeah,
that song just resonates, man. And it just seems to, like, everybody's been there type of song.
Absolutely, you know? That's the thing about him. I mean, I think he's one of the best American songwriters that's ever lived. And everything that you talk about, his stuff is strikingly personal. It's really beautifully crafted and well written, but it's some of his stuff is hilarious. That's the thing, that there's a sense of humor that I don't know of any other, you know, popular songwriter that has quite as funny and dark a sense of humor as Warren Zevon. Rollin' the Headless Thompson Gunner is one of the greatest and funniest songs of all time, with an ending. He actually ends the song with a punchline.
Yeah.
Like, it's the Patty Hearst thing at the end of that song. I remember I was like, this is the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. He ends the song with a punchline, and it's brilliant. It's brilliant. All right, you guys, hang on, okay?
Sure.
We got Charlie Short and Chris Anderson. They're in studio. Androgynous Mustache is the band, and they're going to be playing and salute a tribute to the great Warren Zevon at Space in Evanston tomorrow night. All right, take a break. News is next.
Nighttime in the switching yard. Nighttime in the switching yard. Nighttime in the switching yard. Nighttime in the switching yard.
Put
it out on my main line.
Okay. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN.
I love your new theme song.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks. It's the only Warren Zevon song that makes me just go, ugh. And you guys do play. Are you playing it tomorrow?
Of course. Oh, yeah.
You got to play it, man. You got to play it. Now it's like one of those, like the first time I remember when the first time you guys played it, the first night I'm at Quenchers, and I texted Oaken. I texted Scott Oaken, and I texted him, and you know, because he knew I was going, he couldn't make it. So I texted him, and I'm like, I texted him when you were playing the song. I said, I cannot believe that they're effing playing Nighttime at the Switching Yard. And he texted me back. He's like, what the hell is wrong with them? And and I saw Zevon about five times with Scott. I mean, Oaken and I have seen Zevon together a couple times, and he couldn't believe it.
Right.
And but it's, you know, and that's a chance for you guys actually to, like, goof around and have some fun.
Yeah, it's just become a part of the process now. It's like, when are they playing Nighttime? I think we're the only band in the world that plays that song.
There's no question about it. The second year when I came back, people were going, hey, they're going to play Nighttime at the Switching Yard. I'm like, and then you guys dedicated to me.
Every year.
So tomorrow night when you're at Space, there will be one song dedicated to me, and that's...
And there'll be somebody who'll yell, yeah, Nick! I'll tell him. I'll call later.
Yeah, you call me later. The thing about that is that, you know, people that don't know me, or just know me from, you know, the radio or whatever, when you dedicate it to me, people are going to go, he likes this song? This is, of all the Warren Zevon songs, this is the one he wants to hear?
I think last year I said on stage,
yeah, you,
like,
did explain
I
that,
said,
yeah,
you know, Nick doesn't like this song, so we need to make sure that he could dedicate to it.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you. No, I will say this, man. When you played it, I was like, wow, they're going for it. They're playing Nighttime at the Switching Yard. Okay. All right. So, yeah. So Warren Zevon, we were talking a little bit off the air. I think, you know, he's always been under the radar.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. He's written songs for other artists who, you know, a lot of other artists who have gone on to have hits with them and things like that. But as we were talking about off the air, I think the most exposure he ever got that people would see Warren Zevon was his relationship with David Letterman. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's talk a little bit about that. They had a great relationship.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just reading that you know, after Warren got clean, the biggest, the real first big thing that he did was that their 10th, you know, 10th anniversary show where they had Carole King and Billy Joel, and Warren was on piano and Billy Joel's on keyboard and Carole King's on synth, and he's going, "Why do you have me?" And Paul's like, "Well, because you're the best piano player." He's like, "I don't know what you're talking about." He's like, "No, you're the best." And over and over, Paul, you know, Paul well, speaks at length about it. You know, Letterman's a little bit less forthcoming with the interviews.
Sure.
but, you know, really, and you can tell when there's that positive relationship that people had with Warren, they just speak so warmly of him. Springsteen was one of them. You know, Chris was there tonight. You know, and you know, everybody else, "Oh, yeah, Warren did this and Warren did that." And Springsteen's like, "Oh, he was a really great artist." You know, and it seems like Letterman and Paul Schaefer really had that mentality. He came back year after year after year.
Oh, he did. And we were talking about this off the air. Whenever Paul Schaefer took some time off, and there was a few times he did, like if he took a full week off, Zevon, he asked Zevon to come in and lead the band.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. And when Warren got sick, and I mean that last show that they did together, that where he had Warren Zevon, it was unbelievable. I was crying while I was watching it.
It was unbelievable.
And that album, by the way, The Wind, you guys do stuff from that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure,
absolutely.
How remarkable is that album? Like that's his final. I mean, that's his final work.
And just everybody who's on that album, I think that you can really tell that the appreciation that, you know, the Bob Dylans, the Jackson Browns, the Tom Pettys, the Bruce Springsteens had for him, you know. And like here's, as Letterman said, here's a guy who's getting on the bus and not coming back.
Yeah.
And they all put this thing together.
It's a great album, too. That's a great album. Not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's got to be fixed. I mean, finally,
I
Cheap Trick,
so.
Though.
Yeah, Cheap Trick is in. Yeah,
is in, sure. Which is great. Okay, I always ask questions to my musician friends who come on. There's the two questions that I always ask. So let's start with you, Chris. First album you ever bought?
Vinyl was the Police, Ghost in the Machine.
Yeah, we can't even talk about our love for the Police. We didn't even get into that, man. That's right. We can't even talk about that. Chris and I have and you get Ed in here too, and we'll talk about the Police and going nuts. Okay, what about you? Which first album?
It was the Beatles, the Red Album.
Oh yes,
yeah.
Okay,
because it had the most songs.
Did you get the blue one after that?
I never got the blue one until I had a CD player.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay. All right. You know how many? I've had a lot of people in here, and it's amazing how those Red and Blue albums. That's how people got exposed to the Beatles at a young age. It was those records.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Well, those are the ones that I recognized from the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, well, this has the most songs I know, so I'm going to.
That's it.
I have $15. That's what I, you know.
All right. First concert, Chris.
I went to go see Bryan Adams, but I was not going to see Bryan Adams. The reason I went with all my friends, because we were so hip, was because the Hooters were opening.
Okay. All right. Dan? Dan, is this not
serious?
Unbelievable? Hold on.
As soon as he started, I'm like, no way.
Okay, let me explain something to you.
Right.
I was at that show with Scott Oken. And you know Scott. You've played in a band with Scott. All right. You know Scott's a pretty big gentleman.
Yes.
During that show, we had like eighth row center.
Mm-hmm.
We were standing on our folding on the chairs because, you know, that's what you did.
True.
Scott busted three chairs during that show.
Because the music was just that good.
Yeah. He busted through three chairs because he was jamming so hard. He busted through one during the Hooters and then two during Bryan Adams. He busted three chairs. I cannot believe that was your first show.
My first show.
I can't believe. You have to tell Oken that story. You have to tell Oken that story.
And literally every time he mentions Oken on air, that's the thing he says. Like, my friend Scott Oken, who busted three chairs at the Hooters show.
Yeah, the Hooters, Bryan Adams. Busted one during And We Danced. Busted, just boom, just went. The other one was Summer of 69, and then I think it was Kids Gotta Rock. Those were the three times he busted chairs.
You're going to bust a chair with a certain song?
We kept having to move down because we were standing on our chairs. At one point, I'm like, the guy next to me and I are sharing a chair because Oaken's busted through three chairs. So I can't believe you were at that show. That's great.
At that show, man.
That's awesome. Okay, what was your first?
I can't beat that. It was I saw the Offspring at the Aragon Ballroom.
Oh,
yeah.
All right, Offspring at the Aragon Ballroom.
Yeah, not as embarrassing or hilarious.
No. You couldn't bust any chairs. No chairs.
No, there were no chairs. No. I couldn't hear for 3 days.
Yeah, it's the Aragon. I couldn't hear after Annie DeFranco at the Aragon because the sound is so magnificent in that place. All right, real quick. My first album was Black Sabbath Paranoid. And my first concert was Black Oak, Arkansas. They were the headliners. The opening act before their first album came out, Bad Company.
Whoa, wow.
Yeah, nice. So that was one of those cases where the opening act clearly better than the headliner. Right. So, and you guys played Jim Dandy. I was there.
Yeah. I think you told us that.
Yeah, I think I told. Did I tell you that story?
Yeah, my friend Amanda was like, whoa, he saw Free. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, listen, you guys, it's been great having you down here, man.
Thanks, Nick.
It's good to see you guys again.
Good to see you, too.
And so it's Chris and Charlie from Androgynous Mustache. They're going to be performing a Warren Zevon tribute. They do a great job. I've seen them do it 3 times. It's phenomenal. If you're a Warren Zevon fan, get your tickets now at Space in Evanston tomorrow night, Thursday night the 21st. And it's a link on our Facebook page. Guys, it was a blast having you down here.
It's good to see you.
Have a good gig, man. Good to see you guys, too.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here. And then when we come back, we are going to have Rick on, Rick Moskovitz from the A-plus Pest Control. And, hey, Chicago's number one in bed bugs. And we'll tell you what we can do about that.